again, varies, right? The target cell for FSH is your granulosa cell. And again, in early to mid follicular phase, that is from menses to mid follicular stage, right, they only have FSH receptor. But that changes when you go to late follicular phase. So binding of FSH to its receptor will also increase your levels of cyclic EMP, that is your second messenger, that will promote DNA transcription and synthesis of enzymes to produce estrogen. Again, like in males, even in females, either cells, the theca interna cells and the granulosa cells, cannot produce hormones by themselves. So they need the help of each other. So there's a cooperation between these two cells. So we are looking at early to mid follicular phase now. We said the follicular phase was from menses to ovulation, but we're looking at early to mid follicular phase here. And we said during this phase, we said theca cells only have LH receptors. So let's take a look at theca cell first, binding to its receptor will increase your levels, will promote expression of your LDL receptors on the cell and promote entry of cholesterol into your cell. And this cholesterol will then be converted into pregnenolone, and the pregnenolone will then be converted into androstenedione. So in your theca cell, cholesterol is converted into androgens, and this cannot go any further. But we are producing estrogen, so how do we do that? So this androstenedione is going to move into your granulosa cell at this point, and FSH binding to its receptor will promote expression of some enzymes that will convert these androgens into estrogens. And this estrogen will then move into your bloodstream. At this point, granulosa cells has only FSH receptors. But this changes as we progress to your late follicular stage, mid to late follicular stage. This is basically telling you the same thing. So we are looking at your late follicular phase. So we said on theca cells, nothing changes. It has only LH receptors. That binding to its receptor will promote expression of your LDL receptors on the cell, and you will get cholesterol coming into the cell that will be converted into pregnenolone. And then in the granulosa cell, now at this stage, in the late follicular stage, it has acquired a receptor for your LH. And the way it acquires the receptor for LH is under the influence of FSH. You had FSH in early phase, so that promotes expression of your LH receptors. So at this point, the granulosa cells have both LH receptors as well as FSH receptors at this stage. Oh, that's important, okay? Important to note. So when LH binding to its receptor now will promote expression of your LDL receptors on your granulosa cells, and this will promote entry of cholesterol into the cells, and that cholesterol will be then converted into progesterone. So that's where the progesterone comes in the late follicular phase, right? We don't have progesterone in early to mid follicular phase, but just before ovulation, like 24 to 36 hours before ovulation, you do get progesterone, and that's where this comes from, the progesterone. The progesterone can go no further, and it will diffuse into your bloodstream. Again, FSH binding to its receptor. So what happens here is the progesterone in the cell, a pregnenolone in the cell will be converted to progesterone and then androgens, and this androstenedione can go no further. It still needs to move into your granulosa cell. So this androstenedione will move into your granulosa cell, and their FSH binding to its receptor will promote the conversion of androstenedione into your estrogen. So that's how this cell is secreting both hormones at this stage in your late follicular phase. So you have your progesterone as well as your estrogen. So that is the two-cell theory. So in early stage, you only have this hormone, but in late follicular phase, you have both hormones, progesterone and estrogens. And they both diffuse into the bloodstream to have their physiologic effects. So now what this graph is basically showing you is hormone levels throughout your ovarian cycle. And we said the length of the cycle was about 28 days, right? So what this is a graphic representation of all the hormonal changes that are occurring throughout your ovarian cycle. In terms of, so what we have are your pituitary hormones on the top, you have your ovarian hormones in the middle, and what happens to your follicle throughout your ovarian cycle. At first glance, this looks horrific and say, oh my God, how am I going to make sense of all this? How do I remember all this? But it is like the Wiggers diagram. It's not so tough. It's not that difficult if you break it down, just like the Wiggers diagram. So what we can do is we can look at these hormones, what's happening at each stage of the cycle. So we will divide it into early to mid follicular phase, and then late follicular phase, early luteal phase, and mid to late luteal phase, right? So if you look at it and then see what's happening with the hormones, this would make a lot of sense. So to orient you on your graph, on this graph, what you see is on your x-axis is your timeline. That is your ovarian, the length of your ovarian cycle, and here we have 28 days. It could go up to 35 days. And what we have in your y-axis are a number of things. At the very top, we have your pituitary hormones, which is your FSH, which is your blue line, and your LH, which is your black line. In the middle, we have your ovarian hormones, and what you can see is the gray line is your estrogen, and your blue line is your progesterone. And the black one is also progesterone. At the bottom, you have the developing follicle, which is the dominant follicle that continues to develop. So let's break it down and take a look as to what exactly is happening. And we'll use a flow chart to figure out what's happening at what stage. So basically, what you can see is during early to mid follicular phase, if you look at your pituitary hormones, you can see the blue line, which is your FSH. Your FSH levels are much higher than your LH levels. And this FSH is what is going to recruit a cohort of follicles, and your follicles are going to start to develop. And your LH levels are starting to rise, but they're much lower than your FSH levels. If you look at your estrogens, under the influence of LH and FSH, you're starting to synthesize your estrogens. As the follicle develops, you have higher estrogen levels, your progesterone levels are at a very low levels, they're at basal levels, and your follicle is continuing to grow. So how is it that, so let's see what exactly is happening, and we can use a flow chart to understand this better. So what's happening here is your anterior pituitary is synthesizing your LH, and the LH will act on your thecal cells to synthesize androgens, but the androgens could go no further, they have to enter the granulosa cell. So when they enter the granulosa cell, FSH binding to its receptor will promote the synthesis of your estrogens. Okay, so you have estrogens here during early to mid follicular phase. At this stage, you're not going to have progesterone. So these estrogens are then going to negatively feedback both onto your anterior pituitary, so this is your negative feedback loop, to tone down your LH and FSH response. And they're also going to feedback onto your hypothalamus to tone down your GnRH response. And this happens through adrenergic receptors. In the hypothalamus, this happens through adrenergic receptors, and you need to remember these receptors. So now you have decreased GnRH because the estrogen is feeding back negatively. What the estrogens also do is they're preparing the anterior pituitary for the LH surge for later. So they have a positive feedback effect on your anterior pituitary, and they're priming your GnRH receptors there. So you're getting increased expression of your GnRH receptors here because of this positive feedback effect. At this stage, we have no progesterone. The granulosa cells, besides synthesizing estrogens, are also synthesizing inhibin, and this inhibin is going to feedback negatively onto your pituitary to suppress your FSH. That's why FSH levels are a bit lower in amplitude. So that's what's happening during this stage. Everyone's good? Yeah? Okay. So basically, I've explained it. It's basically telling you the same thing. So now you look at this graph and say, hey, this doesn't make sense. We've just suppressed your GnRH, right? And we've suppressed your LH and FSH. But if you look at this graph in your late follicular phase, guess what's happening here? You're still going to get continuous rise in your LH, and your FSH, even though it's below your LH levels, it's still continuing to rise. And if you look at your estrogens, it's continuing to rise. If you look at your progesterone, it's continuing to rise. And if you look at your follicle, even though it's suppressed, right? Estrogens are suppressing your GnRH loop, your follicle is continuing to develop. So you're saying, wait a minute, this is not making any sense. How is this possible? And this is possible. The reason why your follicle is developing during this stage, your follicle is getting bigger and bigger. It has to do with the fact that your follicle has increased the number of granulosa cells. And the way, so let's take a look at the flow loop, at the loop, and then I can explain it better and we can come back to this. So what's happening here is your anterior pituitary is acting on your theca cells to synthesize androgens, and that's what's happened during your early to mid follicular phase. And these, and then FSH is, so androgens are entering the granulosa cells to be converted into estrogens. At this point, during late follicular phase, it has also acquired your LH receptors. So your androgens will then be converted into estrogens. As you convert it into estrogens, the estrogens are going to positively feed back onto your granulosa cells, and this is an autocrine effect. So before, you remember, we had only single layer of your granulosa cells, but because of this positive feedback, we're going to get multiple layers of your granulosa cells. And as you get increased number of your cells, so this is an example of your positive feedback effect. Mostly all our systems work by negative feedback effects, so this is one of the systems that works by positive. So the estrogen synthesized by the granulosa cells is going to feed back through autocrine effect back onto your granulosa cells to promote expression of more cells, and that's why the follicle is developing and increasing. So what happens now? Because you have so many cells synthesizing estrogen, before probably you had, say, 10 cells synthesizing, you would get 10 cc's of estrogen. But if you have 1,000 cells secreting 1 cc of estrogen, you would have 1,000 cc's of estrogen, right? Same concept here. So as the number of cells increase, you get more and more estrogen. That means your estrogen levels are getting higher and higher during this late follicular phase. And that's why you see a rise on your graph, right? You get increase in your LH, increase in your estrogens, increase in your progesterone, and so on. So that explains. So when your estrogens are higher and reach a peak level of more than 200 picograms, instead of having a negative feedback effect, they're going to have a positive feedback effect on your GnRH. They're going to have a positive feedback on your GnRH. So the estrogen not only feedback positively onto your granulosa cell, but they also positively feedback onto your hypothalamus. And the way they do it is through different receptors, and these are neuropeptide Y receptors. But the estrogen levels have to be really high, over 200 picograms, for these receptors to be activated. If they are low, then they would act on the beta adrenergic receptors, and they would have a negative feedback. But if the estrogen levels are high, now they're having a positive feedback. So if they're having a positive feedback, that is going to increase your GnRH levels. And estrogens are also priming your GnRH receptors, making these receptors more sensitive, or promoting expression of these receptors on your anterior pituitary cells. And so that is what is going to cause your LH and FSH surge. Okay, so this is what, so that's why you get a steep rise in your LH at this point, because of this positive effect of, and that's why your follicle is also developing because of the autocrine effect. And why do you, and one of the other theories that's postulated why the follicle continues to develop even though you have low levels of FSH is, FSH and LH is, one of the theories postulated is because out of a cohort of follicles, this follicle became the most dominant one, so it is sensitive to even low levels of FSH, so it continues to develop throughout this ovarian cycle. So that's one of the theories. So now at this point, you have inhibin, granulosa cells are synthesizing your inhibin. So your inhibin means that's going to feedback negatively onto your FSH. So the surge that you're going to get, you're going to get a greater LH surge compared to your FSH surge. And at this stage, you're also synthesizing and secreting your progesterone. So now you have all these hormones, and that's how this graph is going to make sense. So what you can see is you have your progesterone there, you have high levels of estrogen because of the positive feedback, you have high levels of LH and FSH because the receptors have been primed, and also you have increased levels of GnRH because estrogen is feeding back positively onto that, and that explains the surge. But for LH surge to occur, it needs continuous exposure to high levels of estrogen for about maybe 36 to 48 hours prior to the surge. Otherwise, you're not going to get the surge. So after the surge, So at this stage, you have the progesterone. And what the progesterone does is basically here, some of the progesterone up here in there is going to inhibit some of your estrogen, so your estrogen levels are going to fall just prior to the LH surge. So they're going to drop prior to the LH surge. That's why you see this slope there. So next, so let's talk about progesterone. So what is progesterone doing prior to LH surge? It has a number of functions. It helps the LH surge. It also helps, it has a role in FSH surge too. It also inhibits estrogen because that's why we saw the drop on the graph. And it also promotes ovulation, ovulation process, right? So let's see how it promotes ovulation process. And the way it does it is it synthesizes collagenase, and the collagenase is going to cause breakdown of your wall, breakdown of the wall, and that would cause stigma degeneration. So weak wall means you're going to get rupture and ovulation. That's how the ovum is going to be released. Also, what progesterone does is it also promotes synthesis of your prostaglandins, and the prostaglandins are going to cause hyperemia. Hyperemia means swollen wall, swelling of the follicle. If you have a swollen wall with a weak, swollen and weak wall, of course, that's going to promote rupture, and that's how your ovum is going to be released. So that's what progesterone is doing here. So now we've finished ovulation, so we're moving on to the next phase of the cycle. So the predominant hormone in this stage, the follicular phase, is your estrogen. So please remember that. So the predominant hormone in your follicular phase is estrogen. And so we're going to luteal phase now, now that the ovum is released, so it's ovulated. So once the female has ovulated, then what do you think happens to your corpus luteum? The corpus luteum is going to, the theca end, not the corpus luteum, the follicle, the theca interna cells, and your follicular cells are going to fuse to form something called your corpus luteum, and these are the ones that are going to synthesize and secrete your hormones. So what you have here, basically, in this stage of the cycle, you have high levels of progesterone. You do have estrogens, but they're not as high, as you can see the gray line. Your progesterone is the predominant hormone during your luteal phase. And you do have your LH and FSH that is supporting your corpus luteum to permit these high levels of progesterone and estrogens, but they're not as high because after the peak, they're going to drop. But they're still supporting your corpus luteum. So this continues on for a few days, maybe 8 to 10 days. And the corpus luteum will continue to synthesize high levels of progesterone and estrogens. So let's take a look via flowchart what exactly is happening here. So again, you have your anterior pituitary synthesizing and secreting your LH, and that is going, and FSH, and that's going to act on your corpus luteum, not so much FSH. That's why my arrow is not so dark, or it's a thin arrow. And that's going to synthesize and secrete your progesterone, and that is your predominant hormone during this phase. And the progesterone is now going to negatively feedback onto your hypothalamus to suppress your GnRH here. If you're going to, and the way it does it is through beta endorphin receptors. So at this stage, you also get estrogens. Progesterones are high, but you still have estrogen. The estrogens are also going to feedback negatively onto your hypothalamus to suppress your GnRH. So they're both suppressing your GnRH levels, which means you would get suppression of your LH and FSH during this stage because these hormones are going to suppress that. You also have inhibin, and inhibin is also going to suppress your FSH. So at this point, so beyond this point, between early to mid-luteal phase, if you move to the next phase, let's see what happens. Because these hormones have been suppressed, the FSH and LH have been suppressed, so they can no longer support your corpus luteum. So your corpus luteum is going to involute at this stage because you don't have the LH and FSH. So that means if it's going to involute, it's no longer synthesizing progesterone or estrogen. So if it's no longer synthesizing progesterone or estrogen, what's going to happen to your hormones, your pituitary hormones? They're going to rise and bring you to this stage of the cycle, the beginning of the cycle, where you have increased levels of FSH and LH, and we'll talk about it, why FSH rise is a little bit more than LH. And the reason for greater rise in FSH is you have less inhibin because your corpus luteum has involuted, so there's no inhibin. If there's no inhibin, that means you have greater levels of FSH. So FSH is more predominant, and that's why you have increased levels of this hormone. So here, less is more, right? If you have less inhibin, you have more FSH. And high levels of FSH is going to recruit a cohort of follicles, and one will become a dominant follicle, and this whole cycle will continue again. And this whole cycle continues month after month, all throughout female's reproductive life until she reaches menopause or it's interrupted by pregnancy. If the female gets pregnant, obviously the corpus luteum is not going to involute. It's going to be supported by syncytial cells of your trophoblast, which will synthesize and secrete your HCG, and that will support your corpus luteum throughout pregnancy up to 12 weeks or 13 weeks of your pregnancy, and after that, placenta will take over the role. So that is your ovarian cycle in a nutshell, and the cycle repeats itself just like Groundhog's Day. Did any of you see the movie Groundhog's Day? Yeah, so the cycle is pretty much similar. It repeats itself over and over again until menopause in females. Okay, so now let's take a look at the ovarian hormones. We have estrogens. The estrogens are a group of steroidal hormones, and they're secreted in large quantities. And the major hormone that's secreted in non-pregnant females is your beta estradiol, and that's why I have it in red. This is the major hormone secreted in non-pregnant females. And again, if the female is pregnant, the major hormone that's synthesized is your estriol, and this is the least potent hormone. Beta estradiol is 12 times as potent as estrone and 80 times as potent as estriol, which is the major hormone in pregnancy. Again, how is it carried? It's a steroid hormone, so it's carried bound to your sex hormone binding globulin, and these proteins are, and also some binds to albumin. It is metabolized by the liver and excreted by your kidneys. So what are the functions of estrogen? The estrogen, just like the testosterone, is going to increase the size of all your reproductive organs. It is also going to increase the number of cilia in your oviducts and increase their activity. It also prepares the endometrium at puberty. It also makes the vaginal epithelium more resistant to trauma by conification. And we'll talk about the pycnotic index in the next few slides. One of the unfortunate effects of this is water retention. So it causes water retention. So females do retain water because of estrogens. Again, it maintains your ovarian and menstrual function that we just spoke about. It is also the major promoter of breast development in females. At puberty or throughout puberty, the female's breast development is rudimentary, but the final breast development occurs after she gets pregnant. Again, breast development, for complete breast development, it requires a number of hormones, which I've listed in your pregnancy lecture and lactation lecture. So that's when the final breast development occurs. So what are the functions of estrogens? Again, it's an anabolic hormone, so it builds muscle mass, it builds bone, and that explains why females after menopause, they don't have estrogens, they get osteoporosis, right? It also causes deposition of fats in certain locations, in breast area and hip area, and that's what makes gives females their feminine characteristics. It also causes closure of your epiphyseal plates, and it is more potent than your testosterone, so that explains why females don't achieve the same heights as males, so they're a little bit shorter compared to males. Your progesterones, again, are a group of steroidal hormones, but the most important one is your progesterone, and it is secreted in large quantities, and it's more predominant during your luteal phase, not during your follicular phase, even though you have it during your follicular phase, but it's more predominant during your luteal phase. Also, it can be synthesized by your placenta. It's transported similar to your estrogens, and it's broken down in your liver and to inactive forms and excreted through urine. So what are the functions of progesterone? Basically, progesterone in normal females, not only does it promote breast development, development of lobules and alveoli along with estrogen, but it also causes proliferation of your endometrial lining to prepare it for implantation, just in case the female gets pregnant, it's always preparing for implantation. Again, in pregnancy, it's a very important hormone. It supports pregnancy. Without high levels of progesterone, you cannot support pregnancy because it decreases your uterine excitability. Because as the baby grows and stretches the uterus, when you stretch a muscle, what is it? It has a reflex, right? If you stretch a muscle, what is it going to do? Contract. But the progesterone will prevent the contraction as the baby grows in the uterus and stretches the uterus. So it keeps the uterus quiescent. So that's one of the other functions in pregnancy. So now, next, I'm going to talk about uterine cycle. Just so the uterus also undergoes cyclical changes all throughout your ovarian cycle. And this is dictated by your ovarian hormones. Even though I have listed three phases here, there are four phases. One is ischemic phase, one is menstrual phase, one is proliferative and secretory phase. These are three distinctive phases. But we're only going to talk about these two phases, the proliferative and secretory phase, because we can depict this graphically, and there are always lots of exam questions on this, so I'm going to talk about it. I don't know if you learned elsewhere, this would be a good review. So let's, to orient you on the graph, what we can do is we can divide this graph into two sections. We'll split it in the middle, and we'll call the left side the proliferative phase and the right side the secretory phase. And on your x-axis, you have the timeline, and on your y-axis, you have a multiple number of things. At the very top, you have your ovarian hormones. Right below that, you have the basal body temperature, how the hormones are going to affect your basal body temperature. Below that, what we have is your vaginal conification or pyknotic index or keratinization of your vaginal epithelium. Below that, you have the cervical mucus. And below that, at the very base, you have the endometrial lining. So let's take a look and see how the hormones affect these two phases, how your ovarian hormones affect these phases, and which hormone is predominant during which phase. So if you look at, so your proliferative phase is, if you compare to ovarian cycle, it is similar to your follicular phase. So I would classify this proliferative phase as your follicular phase and secretory phase as your luteal phase because that's where the hormones are high or low depending on which phase you are. So in your proliferative phase, so we are going to look at the this half of the graph. You can see the most predominant hormone is your estrogen. The black line is your progesterone. And the blue line is your estrogen. So this is the most predominant hormone during this phase. And during this phase, if you look at the basal body temperature, it's normal. It's 98.6 or 37 degrees centigrade. So there's no change in basal body temperature. If you look at your vaginal conification or keratinization, which is also called the pyknotic index, what you can see is the pyknotic index rises or the conification or keratinization rises. And this rise in pyknotic index has a protective function because the sex act is a pretty traumatic process, so this is going to protect it from trauma during the sex act. So this keratinization is there for a specific reason. Also, if you look at the cervical mucosa during this phase, usually the cervical mucosa is thin and elastic, and this elasticity is known as spin, S-P-E-I-N, spin Burkett, B-A-R-K-E-I-T. The elasticity is known as spin Burkett. So the mucus, the cervical mucus, is thin and elastic, and it is sperm friendly. It will allow the sperm to pass through very easily. The cervical mucus is sperm friendly. Also, if you look under a microscope, if you place it on a slide and look at it under, smear a slide and look under a microscope, you would see ferning of this mucus. Also, if you place this mucus on a slide and have another slide and pick it up, you can check for its elasticity. You can stretch it up to about 6 to 7 centimeters. So it is elastic, and that's the spin Burkett. Also, if you look at the endometrial lining, because at menses, the females are going to shed the endometrial lining, and at the beginning of menses, they're going to build up the endometrial lining again. So under the influence of estrogen, you're going to build up your endometrial lining, so the endometrial lining is going to get thick, and it is getting vascular because these are all your blood vessels, so it gets more vascular. So these are some of the changes that happens during proliferative phase or estrus phase. So these are all the changes. Now let's take a look at the secretory phase. At the secretory phase, the predominant hormone is your progesterone. That is similar to your luteal phase, right? Even though you have estrogen, the blue line, your progesterone is a predominant hormone. If you look at the basal body temperature, progesterone does have an effect on your basal body temperature, so your temperature is going to rise. In females, the temperature during this phase, they're going to get an increase in the basal body temperature. It would be 99 or 99.1 or 2. So if they take the temperature, it would be a little bit higher than your normal body temperature. If you look at the pycnotic index, that decreases. That means it is less resistant to trauma during sex act. Okay, so during coitus, this is less resistant to because you have decreased pycnotic index or you have decreased keratinization. Also, if you look at the cervical mucus, it becomes more thick and viscous. It is more thick and viscous, and it's sperm unfriendly. It will not allow the sperm to pass through. Also, if you look at the endometrial lining, it is going to increase the size of your endometrial lining. It also increases your vascularity. You can see all these vessels, the spiral blood vessels, they're more tortuous. And at this stage, not only does it increase your builds up your endometrial lining, but it also builds up your glands, and these glands are going to acquire these glycogen molecules here. These are all glycogen molecules, or glycogen vesicles, they're stored. And this glycogen is for nourishing the implanted egg, or if the egg is fertilized, so it will nourish. So this provides nourishment for the egg, these glycogen vacuoles. And again, if the female gets pregnant, it will be supported by your progesterone and your corpus luteum. This endometrial lining will be supported by your corpus luteum by synthesizing high levels of progesterone. And if not, it will involute and the whole cycle will start over again. So just know this graph. There are a lot of questions I've seen on boards and everywhere else. They do ask a lot of questions on that. So you don't want to miss it. It's fairly easy to get the score. So basically, we talked about it. The GnRH activity increases at puberty, and that's the start of your ovarian cycle, and that's your menarche. And the cessation of your ovarian cycle is menopause. So what happens in menopause is you get, after menopause, you get decrease in your levels of estrogen. And these decrease in levels of estrogen are actually not comfortable for females because they do cause some symptoms. And one of the symptoms they would complain of are vasomotor symptoms. They complain of hot flashes, irritability. They may have anxiety and depression. Also, all the estrogen-dependent tissues are going to atrophy. And so the vaginal epithelium would atrophy. And we did say that it builds muscle and bone. So if you withdraw estrogen over a period estrogen, then the bones will not be as strong and they would have osteoporosis. So osteoporosis is quite common after menopause in females. Again, this is basically a graph to show you the levels of your LH and FSH in your urine. This is measured in urine, so these are your urinary gonadotropins. And the blue line is we're comparing males and females urinary gonadotropins. And what you can see is the blue line is the male, right? What you can see is between, and the red line is female. So from birth to age 20, there's no difference in your urinary gonadotropin levels between males and females. But after age 20, the males have a steady levels of FSH and LH, but in females, it rises exponentially and continues to rise until, and it peaks at menopause. After that, there's a slight drop. And if you measure these levels, what you will see is you have increase in both LH and FSH levels, but the FSH rises greater than LH. So what, and that has to do with the ovarian failure because the females have no more germ cells. So what the pituitary gland and your hypothalamus doesn't know is there are no more germ cells. That's why she cannot synthesize estrogens. All it's sensing is there are no estrogens. Hey, I need to secrete more hormones, right? The pituitary secrete more LH and FSH to stimulate that. But the females can't do it because of ovarian failure. So that's why if you measure levels, they would get increase in LH and FSH. So this slide is basically, we are talking about birth control, the mechanism of birth control pills. And basically what happens is the birth control pills, if you administer birth control pills, you're going to suppress the LH surge because these are exogenous. So if you give exogenous estrogens or progesterone, they're going to feed back negatively onto your GnRH and suppress your LH and FSH. And if they're in a steady state, you're not going to get an LH surge. That means the females are going to have anovulatory cycles. That means they cannot release an egg or ovum because they would have anovulatory cycles, right? So that's how birth control pills work, and that's what this slide is basically telling you. And they birth control pills come in many formulations. Some of them come in packets of 21 or 28. If they come in packets of 28, sometimes they could be a combination of estrogen and progesterone, or you could have pure estrogen for 14 days and 7 days of progesterone if it's a 21-day pill. But if it's a 28-day, then you have 14 days of estrogen, 7 days of progesterone, and 7 more days of placebo. Okay, so that's how those pills work, the 28 pills. Again, there are come in many formulations. If you hear any of the terms ethinol, estradiol, and mestrinol, they all mean estrogens. If you hear norethindrone or norgestrol, they mean progesterone. Let's do a question here. Okay, let's take a look and see. Wow, 25% got this question, 48% said what, estrogen? Okay, let's discuss this question. We said 22-year-old attends to reproductive health based on a, and she discovers different phases of ovarian and uterine cycle. Based on a calculation, she's few days away from the end of her follicular phase. Okay, during the follicular phase, what we're basically asking is during the follicular phase, the dominant follicle arises in response to which of the following? So what recruits the follicles? It's FSH, right? FSH. So that's what we're basically asking here is during follicular phase, the dominant in response to which one of the following? You could have ignored the rest of the question, then you could still have gotten it if you read the last line here, right? It's obviously not the estrogen. Estrogen is not recruiting the dominant follicle. That's what this question is asking. So obviously that's not the correct choice. Yeah? Any questions? Confusion? Questions? If you want, you can come back and discuss with me. I'll be happy to go over this question. I still have just one more slide, and to just finish this. So we're going to discuss hypogonadism. Again, if you want to discuss all the disorders in female or medical problems, that's a whole textbook on gynecology and obstetrics. We don't have time for that. I'm just going to talk about hypogonadism. Hypogonadism is due to absent ovaries at birth or they're non-functional. And if that happens, obviously the females are not going to develop secondary sexual characteristics and they would have no development of their sexual organs. Again, we said estrogen is a potent promoter of closure of your epiphyseal plates. If you don't have estrogens, of course, there would be delayed closure of the epiphyseal plate. So these females are going to have infantile sexual organs, and they will be much taller than their peers. If it happens post-puberty, they're going to get regression of the reproductive organs, and the vaginal epithelium is also going to be easily damaged, and they would get irregularities in menstrual cycle and amenorrhea. And of course, the ovarian cycles won't be regular. I believe this is my last slide. I may have one more question. You want to do one more question or stop here? One more? No, I don't have it, so sorry. Okay, so any questions? Or do you want me to go back on the other slide to go over the question? Okay, let me go back on this question. Okay, on this question, what we are asking is, during follicular phase, the dominant follicle arises in response to which of the following? Does LH recruit the follicles? Yes or no? No. So obviously that's not the answer. Is there HCG? Unless the female is pregnant, there's no HCG, which is your human chorionic gonadal. So obviously that is not. It's good that only 2% pick that. So what causes the recruitment of this follicle? It's your FSH. Obviously it's the FSH. Does progesterone have anything to do with recruitment of follicles? No. Actually, the follicles, developing follicles, are the ones that are going to synthesize and secrete progesterone as well as estrogen, right? So obviously, estrogen and progesterone are not the correct choices. Because the dominant follicle arises in response to estrogen, the answer is no. The dominant follicle arises in response to FSH. The estrogen does have positive feedback effect on the follicle, but it doesn't recruit the follicle. And that's what the question is asking. Everyone's good? Okay, we can stop right there. Okay? Yeah.